We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 234. And what's up to those who have joined on the Facebook stream? It's been a few weeks, as we were saying, Scott, since we've done this, and apparently you shaved. You now have a baby face for all the viewers out there. You wanted to look good for the occasion.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to clean up for, in case I had any meetings with Yankees executives. On May 26th or the weekend of, I needed to make sure that they saw it was legit. Now, I actually just got completely sick of the beard. I've had it for like 2 years. But before that, and I just realized that the people who are listening to the show, the majority of them, have probably never seen me without a beard. But I have gone my entire life, most of my life, and most of my adult life without a beard. That is actually new. So while this may be strange for you, the beard was very strange for most.
Yeah. And this, as you were saying, this is the first time Kemp has seen you with no facial hair. So he probably doesn't recognize his own father.
I think it was a strange little beginning when he first saw me, yeah. But got to that dad phase real quick.
You said May 26th, we're 6 days away as we're recording this. That came up fast. We felt like after the first one, which was the first weekend series in April, it was so long until the May 26th, but the Yankees have been so freaking exciting over the last month that it just went by so fast.
Yeah, and you know, we're definitely over 200 people. We're probably closer to 225, 230 at this point. It's going to be a ridiculous time. The t-shirts, when they were ordered, you know, we got them all printed beginning of last week, and they've been delivered. I know they've been sent out. A lot of people have told me that they've gotten the packages. But in case you haven't seen it, we put it out on Twitter what the actual picture was. It's Magic in the Bronx with a top hat in it. It's a cool shirt. It's using the like similar text to our Bronx Pinstripes logo. So I'm happy with the shirt. I think it's awesome looking, and that's kind of what it is, right? That's what we've seen this season, and really in the past in the playoffs. That's what it's been. Whenever the Yankees are in the Bronx, if it's in a postseason game or a big game, just things start to happen. People talk about the ghosts of the stadium if they've come over to the new stadium. All these things, I think, go into the magic of the Bronx. So I thought it was a good idea for the shirt. Hope everybody likes it. But yeah, May 26th, if you have not gotten them, today, Monday, which is the day most of these people are listening, today will probably be the last day that we're selling tickets. Most likely Monday is going to be the last day. So if you have not bought the tickets, make sure that you go on and buy them. Friday was the original date. We kind of pushed it forward. Talking with the Yankees, we got a couple extra days. So if you have more friends, if you're trying to add more people, definitely go on and don't wait. It'll be off of our fan shop on Monday evening, definitely. So go do that. Again, it's $68, and you're getting a game ticket in section 205. Some people will be in 206, but we'll be right in that area. You're getting the pregame party. We're going to be at the brewery. You get your first 16-ounce beer of one of their four top core beers is going to be included in your ticket. And then obviously the Magic in the Bronx shirt. Most of you have gotten it. If you don't, get it by the date. If you signed up a little later, what we're doing is they will all go out after the event, or right around the event time after tickets are sold. So they will be mailed out. You will still be getting your t-shirt.
Yes.
But yeah,
because some people wondered about that, if they can still get the shirt. But yeah, absolutely. You get the shirt no matter when you buy the ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know a lot of people are asking, hey, can I get that shirt? Can I buy that shirt in the fan shop? I'm not going to the event. Well, I'm sorry, but it's not going to be available in the fan shop, at least not now. You know, we'll probably release a lot of these shirts that we've put in the events well after the event. But the people who are going to the event are the ones that are getting the t-shirts. And, you know, we're stepping up the game with the designs each time, making sure that they're awesome t-shirts. And yeah, it's a ridiculous deal to get all that stuff. So I'm excited. And I know a lot of people have been hitting me up. We're going to start coordinating all the things this week, big heads, signs, all that stuff. We got some people that have been in the last episode or the last events. These guys are the ones that have the loudest, the most vocal cheering voices. They're going to be strategically positioned so that we can get loud and get the entire group loud. So I'm excited.
And
for this.
No one returned John Sterling, big head.
No one returned John Sterling?
No, so Susan's going to be going stag to this event.
Man, maybe we might have to recreate John Sterling in some other form.
He's lost forever.
Yeah. All right, guys, before we keep going and get into the show, I want to tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find that perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, and that's fully guaranteed. Nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you there closer to the action for a great price. I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone. That's how I was able to get some tickets for spring training. It was a good deal. It was easy. Definitely the easiest way that I found to shop for tickets. You could be anywhere with just a few taps. You can instantly find seats. I actually have used SeatGeek again for the spring training, and I've done it for regular season games. So go ahead and do that. Best of all, listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show will get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
So the last time we talked, we had 5.5 innings to go into and analyze and overanalyze and re-overanalyze. So now we actually have 3 baseball games. And the first one looked like the Yankees had only played 5 innings in 5 days because they came out flat, which I suppose is understandable, but they quickly put that behind them, took care of the crummy Royals, took 2 out of 3, which makes 8 series wins in a row. I think I saw that's the first, or it's the longest stretch they've had since the 98 season, which was a special year everyone remembers. And now the Yankees sit at the best record winning percentage wise, 30-13 in the big. So that's just one of these things where you keep winning series even when you drop the first one to a poor team, a team you should not be losing to. A few things went wrong on Friday night, but they put it behind them, came back, got the win on Saturday and Sunday. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not expect a team coming out flat after not playing baseball for that long. Yeah. I mean, the way that the game and the season is built is, you know, these guys play practically every day, and that's how they get their rhythm. That's what they're used to. So, you know, totally understandable, and I really didn't think anything of it. And I think most Yankees fans almost saw this coming and then kind of chalked up to the fact that they haven't played in a long time for a Friday night. But yeah, like you said, the fact that they just came back and didn't use that as a long excuse for more than one game, not that they did, but we did, and just came back and took care of business, that was the big thing.
It's not necessary. It doesn't have to be an excuse, but it's something that they realize, let's just sweep this under the rug, move forward, because it's just an aberration. Like, they played 5 innings between Monday and Friday. That is just totally not normal, especially when you're in the late May at this point. They slept in an airport, which we have a mailbag question about. I understand, like, it's not like they're slumming it on the bathroom floor of an airport. They're not flying coach, but it's still, you're not in a bed, you're not in a hotel room. That friggin' sucks. I don't care where you are.
I mean,
are.
Some of them were just going to an area, a lobby area, or some of them were right there. I mean, yeah, it wasn't like they had special privileges to where they were going to sleep. Some of them just slept at the gate.
Right. So, I mean, it sucks. And they came out and we saw uncharacteristic things on Friday, like Gleyber Torres making an error that led to a couple runs for CC. And honestly, I thought he should have made that play in the first inning on the bloop to shallow center field. That's a play that he makes 99 out of 100 times, I think.
Yeah. No, he had a tough day. We've seen him make some spectacular plays, and it seems like the simple nonchalant plays are the ones that he's booted a couple times. And that's a purely just like, you know, doing things too fast, I think, in your head, trying to get to the ball and throwing it, taking things for granted. A lot of things that you see in a young player, what you like is you see the athleticism and you see him making those ridiculous plays because that's where the talent is. The other ones, that stuff will get cleaned up as he gets on.
Yeah, I think, what did he say, that he needed to just concentrate more or something like her? He lost a little bit of focus on those plays.
Exactly, and I think that's it. I think when you have an easy play like that, you take it for granted, and you know, you just kind of assume it's going to happen, and then it just doesn't. You're like, and then all of a sudden the guy's on base, and you're like, what just happened?
The first one, they ruled it a hit. It was off Gleyber's glove, and I'm thinking, I mean, Brian Kenny, of course, like you had the conversation about kill the error. That is the exact sort of play he had in mind, because that's a tough play. The batter put the bat on the ball. He put it in a spot that's tough. So fine, credit him with a hit. But the one, I think it was the third inning or the second inning, CeCe was working out of trouble. It would have gotten him out of the inning. Yeah. And then it led to 2 more runs. That was right there the turning point of the game on Friday.
No doubt. And that's where I think I have a problem when you're talking about Brian Kenny's theory on getting rid of the errors. And I understand a lot of them are very much up for discussion. Error or not error. That's one of those plays that leads in, you know, continues an inning on, that's a very apparent error and, you know, is a big point in the game and should be, it's not on CeCe. There's nothing, anything about that play is on CeCe. It was a routine ground ball, should have been an out. So, right. Yeah.
They couldn't recover from it. And it was one of those weird games, like Whit Merrifield, 3 stolen bases. It's just, it's one of those nights where that's what's going to happen. And then we all say, you know when I knew it was going to be a bad day? When the lineup came out and Torres' name was in the lineup. And then they were like, no, just kidding. It was Torres. Classic mix-up. Torres, Torres. Like, this is the first time we've seen that so far. Fake lineup, guys.
Yeah.
That's when I knew it was going to be a rough night on Friday.
Look, the guy who writes the lineup card hadn't done it in a week. The guy who, yeah. You know, it's a long stretch of nothing for everybody. So there, everybody was rusty on that day. So we will forget about that day.
Yeah. The Yankees forgot about it. Come out on Saturday and Sunday, just mashing the ball all over the park. Hicks with the inside the park home run, second of the season. And that's just one of those classic.
Second inside the park home run of the season.
What did I say?
Just second of the season.
Yeah. Second inside the park home run of the season. Yeah. It's one of those. I wasn't listening, but I have to imagine John turned to Susan and said, well, you know, you can't predict baseball, Susan.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, that's a perfect spot for him to say these things. You know, these are the moments when you love John and Susan.
And Glaber hit one, crushed a 3-run homer. It was 420 feet. All of his home runs this year have been over 400 feet. Sneaky power off the bat of Glaber. He has 4 home runs on the season. All of them have been crushed, and it's one of those things. You could see him being a 20 home run hitter very, very soon.
Yeah, I mean, he takes advantage of mistakes, and he talked about this too, where he doesn't try to hit the ball out of the ballpark. It's definitely not something he's aiming to do. He's definitely just trying to, you know, hit the ball hard and square the ball up for contact. And if you put a good swing on a ball like that, with his swing, and his swing is beautiful. It is a thing of perfection. I love his swing. You know, if he squares that thing up, it's going to go out of the ballpark. So, and you know, when he pulls the ball too, and he's quick to the ball, that thing could go a long way. And that's what you saw. The ball was up in the zone a little bit, and he just dominated it.
He got rid of the. He has a leg kick, and he just sort of did a toe tap on that one.
Yeah.
So you could see him making those in-game in bat adjustments.
Yeah.
Is what we've always heard about him. And I feel like every day we see something where, okay, he recognized that he's not doing something well and he changed it. And boom, there are the results.
Yeah, and I think he also can change it, you know, depending on what his competition is doing too. If he needs to be a little quicker to the plate or a little quicker to the ball, you know, it's nice to know that he can do that, make an adjustment like that where he quiets down the leg kick, goes to a tap, and really can execute the rest of his swing with no problem. That's not something that a lot of guys can do. A lot of guys cannot do that and make that type of adjustment and get their timing back on par so that they can start making good contact. That's one of those things that is just very rare, even for a professional.
And we're burying the lead because Sterling broke out a new call for him. Like a good Glaber, Torres is there.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know if State Farm's getting any royalties for that, but they should. this is the best call of the season so far for Sterling.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He went back to his roots. He went back to the good corny jokes that yes. John Sterling is good at, that everybody will remember, that you're like, oh, that rings well with a home run. It's perfect. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's a good John Sterling call. I love it.
Yep. Absolutely. Sanchez.
He was getting too complicated, getting a little too much into his own head, I think. Maybe the Italian girlfriend had too much influence, and he went back to the old things that he knew worked well and played. And this will play for a long time, as mm-hmm. way longer than State Farm insurance.
It's catchy. Yeah. I'm going to remember that. Yeah. Sanchez, 4 hits, 2 homers. He's got his average up to 225. I don't really think anyone is too concerned with his batting average, but it was ugly for a while because he was around the 200 Mendoza line. His production has been there, 12 homers, 33 RBIs. I know StatCast thinks that, you know, with the exit velocity that he's been producing and the launch angles, that his numbers should be a lot better. I think maybe kind of like Hicks, he's been hitting into some bad luck. I thought maybe, and I know we're going to get into this, I thought after the 4-hit day, we might see him in the lineup again on Sunday. We didn't, but, you know, hopefully this is more just one of those Gary Sanchez tears that we've seen him do before.
Yeah, and, you know, Boone was talking about this as well in one of the post-game interviews. I thought it was really interesting, and it's a similar, you know, challenge that he gave to Didi early in the season of being more patient at the plate. And during that stretch when his batting average was under 200, first of all, Boone made it very apparent that he doesn't look at batting average. He's looking at all these other metrics around the swing and what he's doing.
Of course.
He's looking at OPS. He's looking at the contact. He's looking at all these other things. And it makes sense. The more I talk about it, the more I get into a lot of these numbers, the more I'm a believer that batting average is not a thing and you need to start looking at the full picture. I get it. But when you start to look, what he's been doing, and now he's starting to take some more walks. But what we used to do before is he's like, I'm such a good hitter that I can hit everything. And, when the ball is out of the strike zone, your mind and your physical abilities, what they can do are sometimes different. When the ball is in the strike zone, Gary Sanchez is one of the most dangerous hitters in Major League Baseball. And that's exactly what he's been doing. He's more patient, waiting for his pitches. And now he's doing more damage and he's able to control it. You can see the look on his face. Like even he said something when he hit that home run yesterday on Saturday. Joe's McFly tweeted out. I was like, what did he say? I wonder what he said. And Joe's McFly's vamos coño. It was one of those like, got you. Let's go type, let's go with expletive for him. He was pumped up. He knew it. He's like, you mess around in the strike zone with me and I'm going to make you pay for it. And that's what
he said. He'll punish you.
Yeah.
How much of it do you think, though, was the fact that he's been hitting fifth a lot and their sixth hitter has been a rotating door pretty much this season between Hicks and Neil Walker, who never really have gotten it going or they haven't gotten it going until very, very recently?
Well, I mean, I think that goes back to him recognizing the pitches and making sure that he's staying in his zone. Because if you think about exactly what you just said, who's the guy you want to attack, Gary Sanchez or whoever's batting after him? The obvious answer is who's ever batting after him. So he's not going to see as many strikes. If he's laying off those strikes, then he's going to, he's going to force the pitcher to either walk him or put the ball over the plate. Or if you're making a mistake, Gary Sanchez at that point is going to be ready and make you pay for it. And I think that's what's happening.
And the whole lineup was just on fire on Saturday and Sunday. Austin with the 2-homer day on Sunday. I think he's continues to make it interesting for when Bird is back. I think Bird slots into that sixth spot, giving Gary Sanchez some protection.
Yeah.
But this has been, I think, the number one mailbag question we've received for like 3 weeks running. What are the Yankees going to do when Greg Bird comes back? Because they have too many major league caliber players right now. I understand that's a good problem to have. That is a first world problem to have if you're the New York Yankees. But it's still a problem. So what do they get? Because Tyler Austin has, after he slumped, he had hit the home run, had the 3 RBIs to tie the game in the half a game on against Washington, and then huge day-to-day.
Well, and we saw Tyler Austin was having a really good season up until the suspension. I mean, that suspension...
Yep. Cooled him off.
It definitely cooled him off, and then he came back. I want to say he was like 0 for 12 or 0 for 10 when he started off. It was something like that, something along those lines. He definitely started off cold. You're starting to see him get back into a groove and find his swing. And it's going to be a tough decision. I don't know what they're going to do, but when you're looking at the different options of who you can send down, you're looking at a bullpen arm. You're looking at a guy that is in the back or somewhere in a bullpen situation that's not going to be used as much. And then you're looking at what position players can actually be moved. And honestly, at this point, Tyler Austin is probably one of the only guys. I don't think they're going to move on from Neil Walker at this point. We saw now that he's adding a lot of value. He can play first base. He's hitting in big situations. I mean, he started how many rallies? And now he can play other bases too, or other positions. So I don't think that's one of the options at this point.
And his contract, not that it's a ton of money.
Right.
But Austin at least gives you options where you can send him down to the minors and call him back up this season. If you want to move on from Neil Walker, you have to make that decision right now, and then that's it for the season. Because Neil Walker will get another job somewhere.
Right.
He's not going to accept a minor league assignment.
The other thing about the when you're looking at bullpen arms, and if you're looking at that type of option as well, it's going to be tough to do that because of what's happening in June. June is going to be a ridiculous month of Yankees schedule. Like they have, 3 days off, I think, of the whole month?
It's 28 and a half games in 30 days.
Yeah. So they are going to need these bullpen arms. The bullpen arms are going to be essential in June because of, there's no days off. So there's going to be a lot of guys getting too much work. The starters it's going to be essential for them to go deep into games. And then we're going to start seeing most likely during that home series, I guarantee we're going to start seeing that Scranton shuttle just start going because we're going to see one guy just continue to go. So they can use that one roster spot and try to fill it with more than one guy.
At least for the doubleheader against Detroit and the technically 2 games against Washington, you get a 26th man on those days. and you don't have to, it's basically a free 26th man. You can just call a guy up for a day, send him back down, no questions asked. And it always will be a bullpen arm.
Always will be a bullpen arm. That's going to be a bullpen arm. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, maybe there's still that stretch. You still have to think about who's going to be playing up until those points. Yes, you're given that extra luxury of an added player, but it's still going to be a lot to manage. So when you start looking at the position players and who is going to go when Greg Bird does come up, you know, Tyler Austin, unfortunately, even though he's hitting right now, seems to be a guy that you got to circle and you got to put him up there as one of the, you know, top two candidates to be sent down.
I would. Yeah. And then I don't think it's Andujar, because I don't think Andujar is on the hot seat until Drury is ready to come back.
I don't even think he's on the hot seat at that point. I think he's got the position right now. I think Drury is still sight unseen. We don't know what to expect at this point.
Right, but you saw what the Yankees did with Clint Frazier. They called him up for the Washington series, which didn't really happen.
Right.
They kept him against Kansas City, I think only because Kansas City was throwing two lefties this weekend,
right,
in Duffy and Skoglund. Even though Frazier only got the one start, he had, what was it, two walks and a double?
Yeah.
I thought maybe he'd get him in there again today, just because he's here. And I think they knew they were going to send him down after the game. I figured maybe let's just get him in because he's here. They decided not to. But I think what we're going to see, they haven't announced a roster move yet. I think it's going to be a bullpen arm as they're moving towards Bird. Then when Bird comes back, as you just said, it's probably going to be Tyler Austin, unless there's another injury, knock on wood, that doesn't happen. And then once the long stretch happens, just play it by ear, I guess,
yeah,
with the last men in the bullpen.
And you know, who knows what happens at that point. And I'm looking at the comments in Facebook, too. A lot of people are talking about Gardy and Hicks. So we're going to get to that definitely in the show. We have a mailbag about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what does. You know, unfortunately, the way Tyler Austin is playing, he certainly doesn't deserve to go down. But, I mean, they're in a position where somebody – if everybody's playing well, somebody who doesn't deserve it has to be go, because there's a limit. You know, it just has to happen. And you got to have pitching. You got to be ready for that extra, you know, with an extra bullpen guy in case things go bad. The bullpen arm is extremely important. When you have another guy who can play first base, that's what makes, and the fact that Tyler Austin doesn't play any other position right now, that's what makes him vulnerable.
Yeah. Let's talk about Didi, who was not in the lineup over the weekend for two straight games. Everyone realizes the slump he's in right now. So the first 31 games of the season, he won player of the month, .333 average, .712 slugging, 10 homers. Last 10 games, he's 1-for-42. That's an .024 batting average. He's got a .089 on base percentage. So it's just as bad as you can get. This is not even market correction, because this is so far beyond market correction. I don't even know what to call it.
Yeah. He's in his own head. He's really struggling right now. You could tell. I mean, even after that one hit, everybody's like, "Oh, he's good. He got a hit." And you could just tell he wasn't doing it. I think I was isolated the one incident where he needed to get a runner over from second base, and all Didi does is pull the ball. Couldn't even do that. He hit it to the left center field. It's just something he doesn't ever do. So when you notice that, and he's so out of it, he's really struggling. And he's talking about not doing anything different, doing the same things. That's hard to believe. I think mentally right now he's in a tough spot.
But well, yeah, he needs to start doing something different.
You're right, he does.
Because he's being pitched differently. And if you look, pitchers were attacking him in the first month of the season. And he was making him pay. He can pull the ball, and that's where all of his power is, to the pull side. Now he's mostly seeing pitches on the outer third of the plate. He's still hitting the ball relatively hard, but he doesn't have the same type of power to left center and center that he does to right field and right center. So I think
he doesn't have any power to left field. That's just
when
you look at his home run chart, it's all right field.
He has still hit some line drives and hit some balls decently hard. I think I was reading an article and it said like his expected on base average is like 130 or one. I think it was like 126, and he's 089, so it's shitty either way, but he is still hitting into some bad luck. Even though he's crappy right now, he's crappy plus bad luck. And when you have crappy plus bad luck, you get these non-existent, like, I can't even fathom them. They're so low numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, 1-for-42 is the last 10.
Yeah.
It's struggling, man. And you know, he's just not seeing the ball well. He's not the same. The guy that he was before, the reason he was having such success is because he was being so particular about what pitches he was going to swing at. That's where we saw the walks coming. We saw a very different Didi. But, you know, even throw that stuff away and take away the walks, We're not seeing that DD right now. We're not seeing the guy that made those different improvements. We're not seeing a guy that went back, you know, to what he was at the end of last year mostly, where he wasn't walking as much and being more aggressive. He's just not making contact. And when he is making contact, it's not good contact. So something needs to change. 2 days off, maybe that's a nice little reset button. Actually, it's been a friggin' week. So maybe,
well, no, he played on Friday, but does he play on Monday against Bartolo Colon?
Yeah, I think he does. I don't think he's going to go more than 2 days. I was honestly surprised that he was out today. But, you know, you have a lefty up, even though he does hit left-handed pitching, since he's been with the Yankees, you know, it was just another mental day, I think, for him to take a break.
And Ronald, I saw a quote from Marcus.
Your boy, Ronald Torres, just steps up and just does what he does, man, every time.
Bat on ball. Yeah. Torres just puts the bat on the ball every freaking time.
Every time.
I saw a quote from Tims, and they said that I just told Didi to not even take cage work, don't take batting practice, don't touch a bat for the next 48 hours.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to forget about things and then hit the reset button and come back with a clear head. And yeah. I think that'll help him out.
It's not affecting the overall lineup production, and neither is the fact that Aaron Judge is in a little bit of a slump. I thought maybe they would get Sanchez's bat at the DH spot today, give Judge a little breather, who has barely had any days off. Well, I understand he had a week off. Everyone had a week off. But he plays every day that the Yankees play. He was 0-for-11 coming into Sunday's game. I don't think he had a hit today. He hit a ball deep to right center field that was caught at the wall. I thought maybe you'd see Stanton and Wright, Sanchez DHing today. Didn't happen. Judge is scuffling. We'll see if he gets a day off in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that's, you know, he's allowed a mini slump. Not too many of them, but a mini slump.
Well, it's telling that Judge can be in a slump and Didi can be nowhere to be found, and the lineup is still producing.
Well, I mean, it's a different type of slump. The thing is that Didi is missing. He's been missing for weeks now. Judge is in a mini slump, but he's been, you know, so consistent the entire year. I mean, he's even talking about the fact that he really doesn't feel like he's hit a good streak yet at this point. He doesn't feel like he's been as consistent as he should be or can be. And, you know, he has probably been, if you look across the lineup up and down for the entire year, he has been the most consistent guy. He's always been there. He really hasn't. This is the first slump that we're seeing. But, you know, he's got to nip it in the bud. I think it's, you know, once we saw what a long slump looks like for Aaron Judge, and we've lived through it and he's lived through it, I think it is important for him not to let this go on too long, because then, you know, some bad things can start happening. He can start reverting into bad things. I hope he can nip it in the butt and just and turn the corner. But it's not very long right now, so it's not anything to worry about.
You could tell he was visibly upset with some of the strike calls on him on Saturday night. That low and away pitch that we saw last season, where umpires just have not figured out in their brain that this guy is 6'7" and the strike zone is different than your normal 6'3" baseball player. And it's an impossible pitch for him to hit. It may or may not be a strike, but all I know is it's an impossible pitch for him to hit. And if the umpires are calling it a strike, he's going to struggle. That's just how it is.
Right. It's going to, if it's clipping the outside, if it's clipping the black, he's going to have a hard time. But at the same time, it's not easy to put that pitch there. You know, no. So it's not an easy pitch for a pitcher to throw and locate with consistency. So, and get the call with consistency too, because
right,
chances are it's going to be an inch or two inside or out. And if it's an inside, if that pitch is missing by an inch or two, Aaron Judge is going to smack the ball, and, you know, who knows where it's going to go. So I'm not too worried about that. He's still identifying pitches. He's been striking out a little bit more in this slump. But again, I think it's just something where he needs to get back into his groove. And a guy like that, to me, a big guy like that, days off really, really can hurt a guy like that, where, you know, it's just finding that same spot, getting back those mechanics, getting back that muscle memory to a point. I think he needs consistency for sure.
Let's talk about your guy, Sonny Gray.
Thank God. Thank
best start.
Freaking God.
Was it his best start as a Yankee?
Oh, by
probably
far.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah,
I'd say by a lot, actually. I think.
Yeah, 8 innings.
Yeah,
this was the first time he actually recorded an out in the 7th inning this year. He had never gone past 6 innings,
so,
which is ridiculous.
We're looking at Sonny Gray today, and I was paying very close attention to this entire start, and just I was trying to analyze every little thing of what we could see from this guy. And I can tell you from the very beginning, we saw it was almost a level of urgency. He was definitely attacking the zone. You talked about this when we were setting up for the show. He really didn't shake off Austin Romine much. He was efficient. He was going about nine seconds for the first two innings, and then it started going between 9 and 12 seconds after that on pitches that were thrown back to him.
Which, think about that. He was 27 seconds.
Three times.
That is a gigantic difference.
You're cutting that in half, if not more. That's huge. So what that means is he's getting the ball, he's going back to the rubber, resetting himself, resetting his feet, looking up, taking the pitch, going into his motion. And that's exactly what happened. And what we saw was him throwing the ball effectively for strikes. That curveball was very good. He was locating it. He was locating it down in the zone. It was 79 to 82 miles per hour. Beautiful. Fastball, 94 miles an hour. He had a little slider that was going in the mid to higher 80s. So the velocity was changing quite a bit. The eye level was changing quite a bit. He was throwing the fastball for strikes early in counts to try to sneak one past. And he's a different guy. When you go 0-1, 1-0, the Yes Network put up the numbers for it, but you go 0-1, 1-0, he's a different guy. And I mean, granted, that's an easy thing to say, right? Playing ahead for a pitcher is an easy thing. But with Sonny Gray, if he's not ahead in the count, for whatever reason, his mind goes awry.
That's what I want to get to. It's that, and Cone said this on the broadcast, when things don't go right for Sonny Gray, he lets them snowball. Everything went right for him today in the first 7-plus innings of the game. The first time we saw him in trouble was in the 8th inning. And to his credit, he didn't let it get to him, and he battled through. I mean, granted, he had, what was it, an 8-run lead at that point, so fine, he could just attack. But he retired the first 14 Royals hitters, so he never even had to go to the stretch. He never had to think twice about, oh, was that the wrong pitch? Do I have to question Austin Romine now because I threw the curveball in that situation and the guy hit it there? That was never going through his mind because it didn't happen. So it's like a chicken or the egg situation. What is it? Is it trusting your catcher and attacking? Or is it him saying, no, I have the ability. I have the stuff. Just because that guy roped a single off me doesn't mean I'm not going to strike this next guy out.
Well, see, everything you're doing right there is the problem, I think. Everything that you're setting up as what he's potentially doing is the problem. Because before, what I think he was doing was thinking too damn much when he's on there and not trusting his stuff. So all of those thoughts that you just mentioned should never even enter his brain.
They didn't have a chance to today.
But well, it's because because he was doing it with emphasis. This was the plan.
this was
the plan. He wasn't. He said, "I'm not going to have the opportunity to think about that stuff because I'm going 9 to 12 seconds."
What I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying.
If he had gotten in trouble in the third inning, it would have been interesting to see how he dealt with that.
I agree. And I mean, you can't talk about the fact that you're like, oh, I wish.
No. Of course,
I wish he got in trouble so that we could see what.
No. I'm not knocking the start. Obviously, I'd be a moron if I was. It was 8 innings. He only threw 92 pitches. It was beautiful.
Right.
But what he needs,
we saw what
like works. An easy start. This was an easy start for Sonny Gray. The Yankees crushed the ball, and the Royals were flailing all over the place.
They were flailing all over the place because his curveball was very good. That curveball low and away to right-handed bats was very difficult today, especially when he's coming up 94. And it's a 94 that jumps off that hand. When you're the way that he has that delivery, he's got a little bit of a delay in the motion. When you have that little bit of a delay and the ball's coming 94 off of a guy like him, and then he has an 81 mile an hour curveball. It's gonna look hotter than 94. It comes at you quicker than 94. So to his credit, he was throwing that with effectiveness and confidence. That's the biggest thing. He was throwing with confidence. They had a plan, and rather than talking about it in the middle of an inning, thinking about it in the middle inning, they just executed the plan. And I think that's what he has to do. He's getting in his own head too damn much, getting in his own way. And when you're just executing a plan and you say, this is it, we're not doing anything else, we won't deviate from it. If the plan doesn't work this time, then we'll go back and think about that plan later. And that's what happened.
That's a good segue into the article. And even Ruco was talking about it on the broadcast. It was an article on The Athletic about Sonny Gray. And he's a cerebral guy. He thinks. He's an intellectual. He likes to think his way through games. That can backfire. As we just discussed, that can backfire. Especially for a pitcher of his ability, that can backfire. Like Sabathia, at this point, maybe needs to think more because his stuff isn't there, and that's a good thing.
Sabathia doesn't care. He doesn't give a rat's ass about anything or anybody. He just goes and does what he does.
You understand what I'm saying, though? Like, Sabathia might need to outthink a hitter. Sonny Gray, for the most part, should be able to just attack hitters. He's got 27 different breaking balls, if you listen to anybody who caught him in Oakland, where he's applying different pressure on the ball. He doesn't care about grip. It's just he puts little extra pressure on his index finger or his middle finger, or his ring finger, and he might get slightly more 12-6 break on his curveball than horizontal break on his curveball. Like, all these little things Sonny Gray likes to tweak on the mound. Yeah, he might have fastball, slider, changeup, curveball, but he's got 2-3 variations of all those pitches.
Well, and I think that's part of the executing the plan. I think Romine's got to, if Romine's the guy, you know, you got to make sure that we're talking about the same pitches, the same pressures. We're talking about all these little variations of each pitch. You better be on the same page of which one you're going to throw and stop messing around in the middle of it on different things that you're doing. Romine should know exactly what's coming at any given point. So the fact that he is even not thinking about the way he's going to throw that curveball, or the way he's going to throw a slider, or the way he's going to throw a changeup. And David Cone was talking today, calling it a power changeup, which is interesting because, you know, you see the speed variation on the curveball, low 80s, and then him throwing a changeup, which he doesn't throw very often, but it's a high 80s, more of a power changeup that's, you know, giving you the same look, same arm slot, same exact look of a fastball, but you're still taking some speed off of it. So whatever they did today, they need the blueprint. And I'm not going to even chalk up to say that it was a horrible Royals lineup. This is the same Royals lineup that gave Luis Severino problems yesterday. So they're a capable bunch of hitters.
Sure. No, they're not a bad team. I mean,
they're not a great team, but they're not a terrible team.
They're not a terrible lineup.
Right.
So especially the top of that lineup has some guys that are good or have been good in
Moustakas
very recent
is good.
Years.
Solera's is having a very good year.
Salvador Perez is a good hitter.
Absolutely. Gordon. We're talking about guys who can.
Merrifield's hitting like 295 this year.
Yeah, and he's hitting like 500 against the Yankees. This guy was on base three stolen.
And Ryan Goins continues to only get hits against
the Yankees. Dude, I didn't even realize he was on the Royals until he got a hit. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Ryan Goins. Where did he come
Ryan
from?
Goins. Yeah.
Sick of seeing Ryan Goins.
I think Sonny Gray's next start is going to come against the Angels at Yankee Stadium. Actually, are we going to see him next Saturday? Like, that might line up, right? Next Saturday?
It might.
That would make two Sonny Gray outings on Bronx Pinstripes.
I don't know
days.
If I can handle that in person, honestly.
but I want to see if Sonny Gray gets in trouble, how does he deal with that?
Right.
Does he let it snowball, or does he say, I just had a fantastic start and I mowed down the Royals lineup. Let me tap that and get out of this first and second jam right now.
Yeah. Well, I hope these thoughts don't even enter his mind. That's the problem. Stop thinking.
They're going to. They're going to. That's the type of guy he is.
But that's the thing. Austin Romine needs to level that. Austin Romine, if he's the guy, if he's the Sonny Gray whisperer, he needs to level all of this. And he needs to say, he needs to know that, hey, Sonny, we've talked about this. Stop thinking. If you go more than 15 seconds between pitches, we're going to have problems. And we're going to go back into that room and I'm going to show you those moves I showed you last week. Like, this is going to be a problem. So he needs to stop doing that shit, get out of his own head, and let Austin Romine call the game. That's it.
last bit from that article that kind of worried me is that apparently he's good friends with David Price from their days at Vanderbilt. Yeah. And that worries me because I think David Price is just so mentally weak and he's a soft player. And I hope that Sonny Gray is not that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's the Vanderbilt connection. We know why they're friends. They probably wouldn't be friends otherwise, but it's the Vanderbilt connection. They go back and they have, you know, they laugh it up to at alumni events and drink their champagne and their Heinekens and they tell stories from the day. So it's what they do. It's their thing. I hope none of it bleeds through. There's no osmosis of the softness, even though I think he's still soft.
So Bird is around the corner. Yeah. Who knows what that means? Does that mean 3 days, 5 days, 10 days? But he's around the corner. I really think that we are going to see him in that Angel series. At home, they're going to have the three games in Texas, day off on Thursday. I think we see him Friday in the Bronx.
It's possible. I think that's We said Boone was talking about this week sometime or within the week.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that.
I don't think they're going to. Let's put it this way. I don't think they're going to fly him to Texas for a day.
No,
for a
I game. Think when he come when they go home, he's going to be up. I agree yes. with that. It makes a lot of sense, especially when he's in Scranton doing all the work. It's an easy little shot over to the stadium. That's what's going to happen. So, yeah, I think we're going to see him. I think we're going to be square in Section 205 in the Bird's Nest, potentially there for either his first or second game. Yep. It makes sense by timeline.
Does he get just a standing ovation when he comes back? Does he get sort of like a,
Greg
Bird is back.
You're on the
field. Don't get hurt, please. Don't get hurt. Don't trip over the bag.
Yeah, it's not like we're really, it's not like the Yankees have been missing him that much either. That's one of the things
they got the best record in baseball.
Best record in baseball. You got Tyler Austin hitting 2 home runs on a day. Like this guy's hitting, you know, he's going well again. He's the guy who reinvigorated the fight between the rivalry with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Like Tyler Austin is in a very good spot with Yankee fans right now. The fact that Greg Bird is coming in, you know, maybe a lot of people have been asking, is this going to be a platoon situation? Well, again, it totally depends on what happens.
It might not be with Tyler Austin, though. It might be with Neil Walker. It's going to be interesting because it would be unrealistic to expect Bird to come back and just be the Greg Bird we saw in September and October of last year. Like, that's unrealistic. So he's going to struggle, most likely. Do Yankee fans start saying, well, we had a guy who was hitting. Why are we going with a guy who's struggling right now? I mean, I think most people understand that the only way to get Greg Bird back is to have him go through those growing pains.
I don't think we're going to see Tyler Austin or anybody else up when we're facing a right-handed pitcher. I think Greg Bird will be in the lineup 100% every single time that happens. Do I expect him to struggle in the beginning, though? I don't. I don't know why does he have to struggle in the beginning? I don't understand that. If he's going down in the minor leagues and getting his at-bats, there's no reason why he can't come up and, I mean, he doesn't have to light the world on fire, but he doesn't need to struggle. I don't see why that has to be a thing. If he's 100% healthy, he's getting his at-bats in the minor leagues. Like, that's the whole point of that. He should be able to come in ready to go and be able to resume production. If theoretically, he's a professional ball player, right? Like, that's – I'm not going to sit here and say – and I'm not going to give him, the okay to struggle for 2 to 3 weeks to get under yourself. Like, that's what Scranton's for.
So from one injury-prone guy that we love to another that we hate, Ellsbury is hurt again. He's now dealing with a sore back. I guess he was shut down if he was ever back up in rehabbing. Who knows? Add it to the list. He went down with the oblique in spring training. Then he had the plantar fasciitis, gout, turf toe issue, and now he's got a sore back. I think next we're going to see just a sore ego. Maybe he'll deal with some migraines. Maybe he'll just have a hangnail. Maybe he'll be constipated.
Turf toe can last a long time. Turf toe is one of those injuries that can just, you know, it can come and go for a long time.
I think I asked Hope this question, but my prediction is we never see Ellsbury play another game for the New York Yankees.
I totally agree. I don't see in what capacity he could come back right now.
No, I'm not just talking this year. I mean, he's obviously under contract.
No. He's under contract, but this is the only other year. They're going to release him. We're going to see money being eaten. That's what's happening right now. They're
all of it. No one's taking any money at this point.
No, they're effectively eating this contract currently. That's what's happening. He's staying on the disabled list for all these ridiculous injuries
forever.
And
do you think he wants to come back?
He's not getting a special consultant job, a special advisory role with the New York Yankees. That ain't happening.
What if he was the special assistant to the trainer?
He could be like head of scouting in the Pacific Northwest. Like maybe that's something. See,
he has to have at this point so much experience with injuries and dealing with injuries that I think he could be of value in the trainer room.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk about if we're talking about some kind of an advisory role, it's the only thing that makes sense is how to get catcher's interference and talk about that with the young guys at captain's camp in Tampa. That's the only thing I could see him doing for the Yankees. But other than that, this dude is going to get paid a lot of money to do absolutely nothing. He's going to be rafting. He's going to be hiking trails. He's going to be, doing all these.
He's going to be sitting on his pile of money.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not going to be playing baseball.
Esteban Florial will require surgery on a broken.
Just call it a wrist.
Hamate bone. Whatever.
I thought it was a typo in the original tweet, and it was hamstring. I didn't see broken. It was just an injury. No, it's a wrist injury, not a hamstring injury.
He shot up the prospect boards for the Yankees. Possibly one of the reasons we saw Blake Rutherford get dealt last season at the deadline because of what this kid has done in the minors for them so far. He was off to a slow start in high A. This is going to just delay his progress this season. He's out until August.
Yeah.
But just get healthy and move forward.
Yeah.
See what he does. I mean, he's still so far away from the team. I think that's what we talked about. Like when the Yankees are trading prospects, who is it going to be? And I don't see them entertaining the idea of trading Florial because they have so much time with him.
Right.
And they have outfield. They have an abundance of outfielders right now and an abundance of outfielders like Clint Frazier who are ready to play in the majors. Florial's not close to the major leagues. So you can sit on him, develop him, maybe 2019, 2020, he can really contribute for you.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, 2019 would be the absolute earliest. Then it would be like a September call-up type thing. This guy has like very, very, very big ability. The Yankees believe in him. They like him as a person, the way that he conducts himself. It's a shame that he got this injury so that he's not going to be playing baseball for a little while. But I don't think it changes much in the way that they look at him, the way that they see him, the way that they have a timeline on him because – again, we're looking for another year. The bottom line is he needs to stay healthy. Hopefully, an injury doesn't linger with the wrist, and he can just come back from this completely healthy because that's the biggest thing. But he's an exciting player that the Yankees have a lot of. And right now, you're definitely not going to trade him. You're not going to trade him on this point. And I just I do think if there is an untouchable within the Yankees farm system at this point, it is him.
Yeah, probably. Other than would you call Justice Sheffield?
No, I don't. No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody else but Florial is untouchable at this point.
Yankees going to Texas. Tanaka versus old man Bartolo Colon on Monday. It'd be interesting to see how Tanaka comes out in the game. Does he go immediately to the stretch like we saw him adjust to in that Washington game? Or does he go back to the windup?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he goes. If he feels confident. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those things where if he's not feeling the way his body he's not liking the way his body feels when he's in the motion, he'll just go right to the stretch. But if it works and that's what you're dealing with and you're dealing with like a very, very good, result from being in the stretch, then yeah, stick with it. Why not? If it's working, it's working. But I have a feeling he's going to start with, full motion. And then if it doesn't work, maybe go to the stretch.
Yeah.
You can't lose to Bartolo Colon though. Come on. Like you just can't.
That's Yankees have good numbers off Colon. They're hitting 333, 360, 667 against Colon. These Yankees. Colon has done well against them.
I was going to say, he's been in the league for 97 years, so what are we looking at numbers?
But these Yankees, these young Yankees, guys who were in their mother's womb when Bartolo Colon was breaking into the major leagues, have done well against them.
Well, they should hit him, absolutely. Be patient, stay back, hit the ball.
Herman versus Doug Fister on Tuesday, and then CeCe versus Cole Hamels on Wednesday. We have a mailbag question in a couple minutes coming up about the Rangers, so we'll talk about them more in a minute. Let's get to mailbag questions right now, though. Before I do so, if you want to submit mailbag questions, you can do it at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also tweet us at Yankees Podcast, and you can join the Facebook group. It's called the Bronx Pinstripe Show, believe it or not, and you can post your questions there. Also, we're not giving away a t-shirt on this episode for ratings and reviews, but you guys need to continue with the awesome reviews. 5-star reviews will enter you into a t-shirt contest. Scott and I pick the ones that make us laugh, make us cry, make us feel good, however we're feeling on that day. But it does help us out a ton. So let's get into these mailbags. First up is from Jim L. I'm sure you saw the Yankees got stuck at the airport in D.C. How does this happen to a pro team? And can you imagine if George were still around, he would not have allowed for this?
No, this is one of those things. And on the Facebooks, Leanne is very excited about the comments, about the mailbags coming up. So I don't know how this happens. I really don't. The only thing I could think of is it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, your flight's delayed, going to be 2 hours. Oh, at that 2 hour mark. Oh, it's going to be another 2 hours.
Well, we've all gone through that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it just keeps continuing to go. But if you had news ahead of time, like, oh, we're going to be delayed through the night.
No. So what happened was obviously they were flying out. They planned to fly out on Wednesday night. The game didn't happen. There was weather, horrible weather up and down the East Coast all week.
Right.
Weather delays. And then there was a mechanical issue with the plane.
Yeah.
Which is why they canceled the flight. I want to know though, two things. You're really telling me they could nowhere around DC there was a hotel room where they could go and sleep for the night? That's the first thing. And two, why don't the Yankees just have like a private jet? Like, why do they not have a private jet for these guys?
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know how this could happen to the New York Yankees. You're not getting a booking somewhere in DC at that point. Like, I understand that hotels could be completely booked at that point, and you're not able to get anything. It just seems very strange that something like this could happen to a professional baseball team at this point. It really does.
The Hotel Ramada doesn't have a couple rooms. Like, guys can bunk up at that point. Anything.
You know, I'm still thinking that, like, yeah, there's a mechanical problem. But they're like, oh, but we might be good in, like, an hour or two. Like, I feel like the timeline just kept creeping. That's the only thing I could think of.
I don't know. The details that I read in the article I read, I think it was on the New York Post, were kind of fuzzy. They just said mechanical issue.
Yeah.
whatever that means.
It's a weird...
Because that's classic airlines. They don't tell you what actually is wrong.
Right.
There's an issue with the Johnson rod.
Yeah, like, okay, Johnson rod's not working. You can't pull out. Yeah. How are you supposed to do this? How are we supposed to fly a plane? You want me to fly a plane with a broken Johnson rod?
Is this, though, team building? Is this like one of those things that they look back on and we hear about in the Yankeeography of the 2018 World Series champion Yankees? Well, yeah. You remember that time in May when we had to sleep in the Washington, D.C. airport?
Yeah, it'll be on the VHS, the World Championship video recording.
The VHS. It won't be on the DVD or the digital copy, yeah, only on the VHS.
I need to see the VHS. It's the only way I can watch these. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things. You know, you got to laugh about these type of things. When you're in there and you're talking about these moments that happened, you're like, how the hell? We're the New York Yankees. We get paid millions of dollars. We're literally like one of the top three most... lucrative franchises in sports history, in all of sports, in the world, and we're sleeping in an airport right now. This is happening.
So I was debating telling this story because it's embarrassing, but I actually pooped my pants in the Washington, D.C. airport back in eighth grade on an eighth grade field trip. Shit myself.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say last week or 2 weeks ago.
No, it was at least whatever it was, 15 years ago. Yeah. That's my memories of a Washington, D.C. airport.
That's a brutal memory. I might have kept that one to myself. That's a brutal one to think of. So the entire time you're thinking of these guys sleeping at an airport, you're thinking of little Andrew Rotondi scared out of his mind, having to go to the bathroom so badly that he just goes.
Yeah, well, it was one of those day-long field trips where we actually flew down that morning and flew back.
Wow.
Didn't go all day. Shit happens sometimes, Scott.
I guess so.
You got a baby at home, you know.
A baby, right? A baby. They wear diapers. You guys flew on school trips? What kind of bougie middle school did you go to? We took buses.
Maybe it wasn't middle school then. What was it?
I feel like we're talking like college now.
No, it wasn't college. Did
we need to lay you down on a couch?
I was definitely only like 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah. I don't know. I took buses everywhere we went. Everywhere we went, it was buses.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this timeline might be messed up.
All right. What's up for the next mailbag?
Next one is from PJ, is at Now Batting 99. He says, how long do we see Hicks as the starter? This is what a lot of people have been pining for.
A lot longer.
Obviously, because Clint Frazier was coming back up. And then, all of a sudden, Clint Frazier shows his head, shows his face in the clubhouse, and Aaron Hicks goes on a tear.
It's a little coincidental, don't you think? Little motivation. We saw Hicks get motivated last year in spring training when Aaron Judge was the new young kid around.
Yeah.
And now Clint Frazier might be threatening to take his job, and Hicks says, I better start hitting again. Get another inside the Parker, another triple, 7 hits in the Kansas City series. Dude was batting cleanup today. Hadn't done that since high school. And he was batting leadoff the day before, so Boone is deploying him in different ways.
Yeah, I think it's definitely telling to the way he reacts to things, because I think it is something. Everybody keeps talking about how Aaron Hicks is this guy who's ultra competitive, is really good at all these other sports, great golfer. Obviously he reacts to pressure well, and he needs that type of thing to drive him. So, and some people are definitely like that, where if they have something, they can take it for granted. They can, just be a little lackadaisical, not thinking they're being lackadaisical, but just not put as much pressure on themselves. And then when they have something, it's a fire in their on their ass or something coming, they're like, okay, pressure's on. I got to do this or I'm not going to be here. And that's what we're seeing. I think he does react to that. So I don't know how you bottle that up and use that as like a very regular thing. But maybe Aaron Boone needs to figure that out, because we're seeing a very good Aaron Hicks right now. We saw a very bad Aaron Hicks before that.
Right. And if you're looking at the outfield as it stands, Gardner's still the one who hasn't had the results that we expect from Brett Gardner.
No, I mean, he's been struggling for sure. And everybody keeps looking at you look at the numbers on Brett Gardner and they're not good. They're not good numbers. But when you look at the batting average, I'm sorry, the on-base percentage and things like that, that's where you start to see how he's been. And he's been struggling lately, there's no doubt. But even when his numbers were bad before his latest struggles, the on-base percentage was there. And we're also seeing the fact that he's working the count and setting himself up. And we've been talking about this. His value is not so much in the batting average and what he's doing with that. It's working the count. It's getting on base for the guys after that. That's his biggest thing. I got to plug in my computer, so I'll be right back.
Okay. I will read the next mailbag question and talk to myself as Scott plugs in his computer. It's from Colin at Colin0515. Here's the name I haven't heard thrown out there yet if the Yanks decide to get another pitcher at the deadline. Bartolo Colon. Texas will be selling come July, and Colon has been very consistent this year with a 3.32 ERA and whip around 0.90 at the time I'm writing this. He would present a cheap option where we could hold on to big name prospects and get a guy who has been very consistent and doesn't fear the big stage. Could Big Sexy make his return to the Bronx? And also, I don't know if you saw this, Ken Rosenthal reported that the Rangers are open for business. And I have to imagine that means Cole Hamels and probably Bartolo Colon and whoever else on that roster is going to be traded.
Yeah, it's interesting to see who they're going to do. Cole Hamels is definitely going to be a guy that's going to be traded. They're praying that he can have, you know, some good starts string together. Right now, I can't see Bartolo Colon coming over to this team. I just cannot see it. It's a mental barrier for everybody to see. The fact that they would trade for a guy like, how old is he? Is he 50 yet? Is he 46?
45,
he's
46.
Old. He's freaking old. And the fact,
he's the ageless wonder, though.
I understand that. I just can't see them mentally trading for a guy like Bartolo Colon. I just can't see it.
Well, how is that an upgrade, really?
It's not. It's really not. But
because it's not like Bartolo Colon can give you a lot of innings. I mean, yeah, he might be able to go 5 innings and keep you in the game, but the Yankees have pitchers who can do that just fine.
Yeah, I mean, Bartolo Colon has a rubber arm. The fact is that he becomes hittable after that. So he's, look, I just don't think it's happening. It's a very easy answer. I don't even think I have enough excuses to throw out there that are going to justify anything, because it's just a simple answer. It's just, you look at this team, how young they are and how ready to go they are and how good they are. You can't trade for a guy like Bartolo Colon and add him to your roster. You just can't do it. I'm sorry.
Bartolo,
the optics are terrible.
He was on the Yankees in 2011, and at that point we were all saying, oh, isn't it funny, like Bartolo Colon, probably last team he's ever going to pitch for. Here we are 7 years later and the dude is still pitching.
I know, he's been around forever. The guy's been on practically every major league team. He's gone through a very, very interesting, when you see the pictures of the years go by, he's a very interesting transformation up to what we got now. Look, everybody loves a little Big Sexy sometimes when he does good things. You know, when he goes deep with a perfect game or a no-hitter. Everybody's rooting for the guy at
Sunday
that point
baseball,
because he's
old.
And because he's a big dude. But no, we don't need him on this team. He should not be a New York Yankee right now.
Should the Yankees take a look into the Cole Hamels sweepstakes? And here's, we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but again, here it is. 2019, he has a $20 million team option, but a $24 million vesting option with a $6 million buyout. The option vests if he, one, has 400 innings pitched between 2017 and 18, including 200 innings in 2018. So he has to hit 200 innings in the 2018 season. And two, is not on the DL with a shoulder or elbow issue at the end of 2018 season.
It's going to be interesting. Again, he's got to put up some good numbers right now. He's got to show that he's able to do that. But, I mean, he's one of those guys that makes sense if you think about a name, but I just don't know if he's that same guy anymore. He's got postseason history. I know he's not the same guy.
Could it be a Justin Verlander situation where Justin Verlander was not motivated in Detroit last year? Detroit sucked.
Justin Verlander is not a guy that's been injured, though. Justin Verlander is a guy that...
He was coming off an injury in 2015, and that's kind of why his numbers went down. I understand Cole Hamels has probably had more injuries, Cole Hamels was not injured last year.
But Justin Verlander has been a very durable pitcher. I mean, he's a guy that we haven't really seen much of a velocity dip. We haven't seen... I really feel like that was a guy, give it, like, the way that he was pitching was because of the situation he was in.
He was 24 starts last year for Cole Hamels, and then 32 back in 2016.
Yeah, Verlander was not a guy that really saw any drop-off in physical ability. I think we saw some performance issues, but again, we saw records being different, but he's still that good pitcher. And in big games, like, he's still physically a present guy. Cole Hamels, I just don't think he's got the same stuff he used to, and I think that's the biggest one. Verlander has the same stuff. His stuff is still there. There's no doubt about that.
Well, we'll see firsthand on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he's pitching and to show that he's healthy. But again, I have a feeling they're going to be asking for too much for a guy like Cole Hamels. And I just think there might be better options where if you're going to go and you're going to spend some of your good prospects, you know, guys like Corbin, like I think that's a guy that they might try to target, but I don't see that happening either because
but Arizona,
of the way
they're playing for that division. The Dodgers are off to a really rough start. Like right. They're playing to win that division.
So that's why I don't think they're really going to be going after. That's a guy that has been, you know, surfaced as far as rumors and definitely right. We heard about him in the offseason. But you got to look at where, you know, what teams are struggling. People have talked about the Mets and DeGrom. Like the Mets and the Yankees just don't make very many
that's
trades.
That's a good segue.
They just don't. These are not good ones. And I know I'll read the next mailbag because it's from Luke Vanderhoff. He's in our Facebook group. He said WFAN was talking about the Yanks trading for DeGrom and said that it could be a win-win for both sides. Wondering your opinions of what you think it would take to add DeGrom to the rotation before the deadline. Frazier, Andujar, or possibly more. It's going to be a ridiculous ransom, a huge ridiculous ransom because he's going to be by far the best pitcher available.
Well, is he going to be available? I'm not convinced.
If he were available, he would be the best pitcher available. And you're also going to the Mets, the crosstown rival, quote rival, and they're not going to give him up for anything but a King's ransom.
Right. The Mets would ask more from the Yankees than they would another team in baseball. Any other team in baseball.
And any other team they're going to be asking for a lot.
No, other than maybe like the Nationals or the Braves, they're not going to trade him there. I think they would trade him to the Yankees before they trade him in their own division.
I just don't think it's happening. It's too big of a name. It's too big of a
play it out though. Let's humor Luke. Is Miguel Andujar and Clint Frazier, does that get the job done? Those are two players that the Mets can plug into their everyday lineup tomorrow.
No, I don't think it does. I don't think those two guys even make that deal because I think when you're talking about a guy like Jacob DeGrom, he's number one ace type guy. You has experience. He's just a very good pitcher overall. And when you're talking about the way that the league is now and how coveted these pitchers are, I don't see them getting a guy like Miguel Andujar and an unproven guy like Clint Frazier that, yeah, they could plug in, but they also have prospects that haven't worked out very well. They need to see either a guy that's way up there, like a guy like Esteban Floreal, I could see potentially them talking about. But again, I think that's where it would start.
All right. Next question is from Chris. I know this was spoken about before, but I want your raw, uncensored opinion. I like Gardy and wouldn't mind seeing him retire as a Yankee. And the Yankees showing him some loyalty means a lot, but do you see them trading him as part of a package deal this year or during the offseason? He's still worth something, or is he here to stay until retirement?
You know, I think Gardy is, I think this year is going to be a pivotal year. I don't think they're going to trade him in season. I don't think they're going to, I really don't think
they're going to extend
him.
What would they get? I don't think
they would
get
much. There's not really much you would get at this point for a guy like him. So I think,
he's got the option for next year.
That's why I think this is a pivotal year. I think what we're going to do is we're going to see this year play out. He's a very big part of this team. Whether you like him or not, I'm talking to this dude Jorge in the comments. Here's your shout out. He is an integral part of this Yankees team. And whether it's even if he's struggling, he's still an integral part because what we talked about before, he works the count. He gets big hits. His on-base percentage is high. He still walks a lot. And what he's doing is he's setting the table for the guys that can mash the ball. So when you're looking at some of these statistics that don't matter as much, or you're seeing a mini slump, that's it. That's what it is. Like Brett Gardner is a streaky player. He's always been a streaky player. They're not going to get much for him. I think after this year, the Yankees, if they don't trade Clint Frazier in the middle of the season or at some point, what we're going to see is a very big decision for them to either renew that option or this is Clint Frazier's job. And I don't think they will renew that option at that point. I think at that point, what we're doing is we're getting off on more of like an amicable, a parting of ways. I think that's how it kind of plays out.
Yeah. I think we see Brett Gardner play for another team after the Yankees.
Yeah. I think so too. Yeah. Cause he's already talked about that. He was talking about that on CC and Ruco's podcast. He wants to play for four more years. He's not playing for four more years on this team.
No, it's something, I don't know. I could make up a scenario in my head where that happens, but very, very unlikely.
Yeah, no, it's not happening. 4 years is not happening. It's just not.
All right, what's the last question?
Last one is from David in Florida. He says, I just listened to your podcast and it got me thinking about Robinson Cano. I couldn't think of one clutch October hit or signature moment for him as a Yankee. He was a very talented and put up great numbers, but seemed to disappear in the playoffs every year. His career postseason batting average is .222. And had an OPS of .267. He put up great numbers in 2000.
OBP,
of .267. He put up great numbers in 2010 ALCS, .348 and 4 home runs, but I can't remember any of it. Okay, sounds like a personal memory thing. I have to imagine this will rule him out for getting into the Hall of Fame and ruin his legacy. Just glad he wasn't busted in pinstripes.
Well, they lost that ALCS to the Rangers. Had they won, I think maybe it would be a little bit more memorable than. I think maybe we might remember Cano leading them to that pennant if the Yankees had beat the Rangers. And it was the Rangers, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
So I think Cano is, his legacy is going to be tainted because 100% because of this whole thing, right? Definitely, we know that. That's what happens. He's the fact that these other things are coming out, I think that we're now realizing, if you listen to Teixeira and kind of look at some time frames here, because we just did a little bit of investigating ourselves, which really didn't do much. What didn't take too much. But you look at where the biogenesis, when the biogenesis scandal came out, that was what, 2013, is that what we said? And Robbie's assistant was on the list for biogenesis. A-Rod, biogenesis. Melky, his best friend, biogenesis. There's a lot of smoke around this. And I do remember there was smoke around Cano at that point, but it was linked to his assistant, is I think what I'm remembering. But yes. When you listen to Teixeira and you say that he was not surprised, and you see how it played out in the years of when the biogenesis scandal came out and when he was a free agent, maybe the Yankees gave him that offer because they knew that 10 years was one of those numbers that he was not going to accept anything from. Maybe they knew that if they gave him an 8-year deal, one, they'd still look like they offered him a deal, but they knew damn well that he wasn't going to accept it because there was a lot of smoke that they knew about. I think a lot of people knew about this before what we're learning about now.
Yeah, I've given Brian Cashman a hard time for deciding to lowball Cano and then go out and give 7 years to Ellsbury.
Lowball.
Low ball as far as the market goes. I mean, he got a 10-year, $240 million contract from
year by contract by year average, though. You were still making a lot of money.
It's still $50 million. We're talking about $50 million.
It was the 2 years. It was the big deal.
Right. And then going out and signing Ellsbury and Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran instead. I've given Cashman a hard time on that because I think Cano was the better player in all of those dealings.
Right.
If this factored into it, then you have to reassess that whole offseason.
Yeah.
I can still criticize Brian Cashman for giving Jacoby Ellsbury.
I was going to say, it's kind of ironic who they signed.
Because that is the worst contract in Yankees history. I don't care steroids or not for Robinson Cano. I'd rather deal with Cano and his steroids than deal with Jacoby Ellsbury and his injuries.
Whatever it is.
But it does make you reevaluate Brian Cashman that offseason and his dealings with Cano.
Yeah, I think the more we're hearing about this and the more guys are saying like, hey, something was going on. And Teixeira wouldn't go into details, but he pretty much said it wasn't a surprise.
Surprising he was that
candid with the whole
situation. Outspoken about it. Yeah. Because maybe most players...
Maybe it's not as a big of a surprise, as a big of a secret as we all think it is.
Obviously it's not, but I think a lot of ex-teammates would just say, you know, I really hate to see that from a teammate. What he did behind closed doors was not my business. I just focused on going out there and playing.
Right.
Like, that's the canned answer he could have very easily give, and he chose not to. And I respect him for not doing it.
Well, I mean, he's in
I've heard him
spot.
Get criticized. I heard him get criticized saying that, oh, he threw his ex-teammate under the bus.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, Teixeira is speaking his mind. He is now a media member.
Right.
And if all we're going to ask of our ex-players is them to give canned response, then what the frick are they going to do that job for? I'd rather have a guy who actually is honest and candid. So I respect that.
Well, and I agree with that. I think that's his position now. His job is to tell his opinion, to talk about things. You know, I think he definitely left the details out on why he thinks that way. But he just kind of gave a broad, overview.
Fine. He doesn't
want to
air Cano's dirty laundry, right. But at least we got enough of the tidbit from
Teixeira
on it.
But it's also like it's just Teixeira giving us some information to look back at what's already printed and we know about. The fact that there was all this biogenesis related all these people related to biogenesis that are surrounding Robbie Cano. It's all right there in black and white. We knew all that stuff. I think a lot of us forgot the fact that his assistant was on that list. The fact that, Melky's his best friend and got busted was building fake websites and all.
No one forgets that. That's hilarious. That's one of the funniest PED busts ever.
The thing is, No, but I'm talking about the connection with Cano. And when you talk about these things, like, it's all right there. It's all right in front of us in the history books. We know that there was smoke there. And you know, there was that report about that when there was some link from Dominican Republic that was 86. Like, they said it wasn't a big deal. And it kind of got swept under the rug at that point when the smoke did come out about Cano because of his assistant. Took basically the fall on that one. But, yeah, you know, it's all there. It's not surprising. Before Teixeira said that, I wasn't surprised. Were you?
No, I wasn't surprised. People were like, I think I said this last week. People were happy to see Cano get busted. I was not happy to see Cano get busted.
I'm not happy to see anybody get busted for that. But if you're doing it and you get busted, then you're doing it for, you're the one that's doing it. So yeah, I'm numb
to these steroid
I'm happy that you got
point.
Busted rather than not get busted. I'm rather sure. that you didn't get. You go through skate through history and be one of the guys that did it and didn't get caught. I want all those guys to be exposed.
Well, like David, I'm happy he did not get busted in a Yankee uniform because that would suck.
Me too.
All right. Thanks everyone who submitted the mailbag questions. Submit yours for next week's episode. We do them on every Monday show. Next episode will be out on Thursday, as usual. We'll be talking about that Texas series and getting ready for the May 26th event. As Scott said at the top, you can still get tickets through today as you are listening on Monday. So if you want to still come to that event, if you're going to be in the Bronx over Memorial Day weekend, go check out the fan shop there. Scott, anything else before we get out of here?
Hey, I'm pumped up for that. Over 200 people. We're going to be rocking out 205, potentially Bird's return to Yankee Stadium. Huh? That could be a big storyline when we're out there.
Maybe. We don't know yet. We don't know yet.
I'm going to tease you with that. Bird's return to Yankee Stadium. Come get your tickets.
All right, guys. Talk to you in a few days.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.